A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's personal, not just theoretical. He's been dealing with something for years now that most doctors don't even know to look for. After his gallbladder surgery, he started getting this severe bloating after meals. Normal gas volumes. But his stomach distends like he's 6 months pregnant, and nothing he does consciously can stop it. The question is, what breaks in the body's subconscious coordination after a surgery, and why can't the brain just fix it?
The thing that makes this so maddening is that the assumption we all make about bloating is wrong. You feel distended, you think gas. But there's this condition called abdominal phrenic dyssynergia, APD, where the gas is completely normal. The distension is mechanical. The diaphragm and the abdominal wall are doing the opposite of what they're supposed to do when you eat.
It's a coordination problem, not a gas problem. Which means all the usual stuff, the simethicone, the elimination diets, the probiotics, they're treating a thing that isn't actually happening.
Studies using manometry and electromyography have confirmed this. Colonic gas volumes in these patients are unremarkable, but the EMG shows the diaphragm contracting downward during exhalation while the abdominal wall contracts inward. It creates this piston effect that pushes the abdominal contents outward. Visible distension from a mechanical mismatch, not from trapped air.
Your muscles are effectively fighting each other, and your abdomen is the loser.
That's the image. Your diaphragm is pushing down, your abs are pulling in, and everything in between has nowhere to go but out.
Daniel's question, the one that really sits at the center of this, is how does that even happen? One day the coordination is fine, you have surgery, and then suddenly the subconscious reflex is broken and you can't think your way back to normal.
This is where it gets neurologically fascinating. The working hypothesis is something called visceral somatic reflex disruption. Your gut, diaphragm, and abdominal wall are all talking to each other through the vagus nerve, through the brainstem, through central pattern generators in the spinal cord. It's not a conscious pathway. You don't tell your stomach to relax to accommodate a meal. It just does it. And when you cut into the abdomen, gallbladder surgery being one of the most common triggers, you may be disrupting the afferent signaling from the viscera up to the nucleus tractus solitari in the medulla.
The what in the what?
The nucleus tractus solitarii. It's a cluster of neurons in the brainstem that receives sensory input from the vagus nerve. Stretch signals from the stomach, pain signals, pressure signals, they all route through there. The idea is that surgery causes local inflammation or scarring that alters that signaling. The brainstem starts getting weird input, and it learns a maladaptive motor pattern in response. The diaphragm and abdominal wall co-contract instead of reciprocally relaxing. And because this is happening at the level of the brainstem and spinal central pattern generators, not the motor cortex, you can't override it with conscious effort.
It's not that Daniel forgot how to relax his stomach. It's that the part of his nervous system that handles that automatically has learned a new wrong pattern, and the conscious brain doesn't have the access to rewrite it.
You can't will your diaphragm to stop contracting any more than you can will your heart to slow down by thinking about it. These are autonomic and brainstem-level coordinations, and once the pattern is learned, it's stubborn. The brainstem doesn't do quick unlearning.
Which is why this is so debilitating. Daniel described it as looking like a beer belly after eating, or being pregnant. And for someone who's otherwise healthy, that's not just physically uncomfortable. It changes how you move through the world.
It's surprisingly common, even though it's poorly recognized. After gallbladder surgery, somewhere between 10 and 40% of patients report chronic bloating. Even the low end is a lot of people walking around with a coordination breakdown that nobody's diagnosed.
The diagnostic pathway for most of them is probably a hydrogen breath test, maybe a gastric emptying study, and then a shrug when everything comes back normal.
Because the tests are looking for gas, for bacterial overgrowth, for motility problems. APD doesn't show up on any of those. You need abdominothoracic manometry or EMG to see it. The diaphragm and the abdominal wall are doing a dance, but it's the wrong dance, and nobody's watching the dancers.
We've got a condition that's mechanical, not gaseous. A reflex that's learned at the brainstem level, not consciously controlled. And a trigger. Abdominal surgery, that seems to flip some switch in the visceral somatic wiring. The question Daniel's really asking is, if this is the mechanism, what can anyone actually do about it?
That's where the treatment landscape gets both promising and deeply frustrating, because you can't just take a pill to rewire a brainstem reflex. A neuromodulator that bathes the whole central nervous system isn't going to surgically retrain one specific motor pattern. It'd be like trying to fix a bad golf swing by taking a sedative.
That's actually not a bad analogy. The golf swing is a learned motor pattern. If it's wrong, you don't fix it by dulling your entire nervous system. You fix it with targeted practice and feedback. Which is exactly why biofeedback is the most promising avenue for APD.
Before we go there, I want to sit with the etiology a bit longer because there's something haunting about it. The idea that your body can learn a wrong pattern and then lock it in permanently without your consent. That's a strange kind of betrayal.
And it's not unique to APD. Pelvic floor dyssynergia is probably the closest parallel. Same idea. The muscles that should relax during defecation instead contract. It's a coordination breakdown at the brainstem and spinal level. And just like APD, you can't think your way out of it.
Surgery is a particularly interesting trigger because it's not just about cutting tissue. There's inflammation, nerve stretch, the anesthesia itself. Any of those could alter afferent signaling. The vagus nerve is running right through the surgical field in a gallbladder procedure. It's not hard to imagine how the signaling gets scrambled.
Is there something specific about that procedure that makes APD more likely?
The gallbladder sits right under the liver, tucked up against the diaphragm. The surgical field is in the right upper quadrant, and the diaphragm is right there. There's also the fact that bile, which used to be stored and concentrated in the gallbladder, now drips continuously into the small intestine. That changes the chemical signaling environment in the gut. Some researchers think altered bile acid signaling could be part of the afferent disruption.
It's not just mechanical trauma to the nerves. The whole chemical conversation between the gut and the brainstem might be speaking a different dialect after the gallbladder is gone.
That's the hypothesis, and it would explain why the reflex can persist indefinitely. The brainstem isn't just recovering from a one-time injury, it's adapting to a permanently altered signaling environment. The bile drip doesn't stop. The vagal afferents keep getting weird input. The maladaptive pattern gets reinforced every single meal.
Which makes the treatment question even harder. If the trigger is ongoing, then any fix has to either normalize the signaling or retrain the brainstem to interpret the new signals correctly.
That's the core challenge. Biofeedback can teach you to consciously coordinate the muscles during a session, but the moment you stop paying attention, the moment you're distracted by a conversation or a work deadline, the brainstem pattern reasserts itself. It's like physical therapy for a sprained ankle. You retrain the proprioception, you rebuild the coordination, but it takes months of daily practice, and if you stop, the old pattern creeps back.
We're talking about a condition where the treatment is essentially teaching your brainstem a new language, one practice session at a time, while the old language keeps getting spoken at every meal.
That's the size of it. The research on biofeedback for APD is still small. The studies that exist show symptom improvement in about 60 to 70% of patients, but the effect is often partial. People get maybe a 50% reduction in bloating. It's meaningful, it's life-changing for some, but it's not a cure.
The other thing Daniel flagged, neuromodulators, that's where the frustration really sets in. Because a patient hears nerve problem and thinks there must be a pill for that. But the pills we have are blunt instruments.
SSRIs, tricyclics, gabapentinoids. They all work by broadly modulating neurotransmitter levels across the entire central nervous system. They can reduce visceral hypersensitivity, which is real and can help with the pain component. But they cannot retrain a specific motor reflex. You can't pharmacologically target the nucleus tractus solitarii in a way that says stop co-contracting the diaphragm and the abdominal wall. The pharmacology isn't that precise.
Then you get the side effects. Sedation, weight gain, cognitive fog. If you're taking something that dulls your entire nervous system just to maybe take the edge off a mechanical coordination problem, the cost-benefit is rough.
It's the wrong tool for the job. like using a sledgehammer to adjust a watch.
I want to name something that I think Daniel's prompt is really getting at. It's not just what broke or how do I fix it. It's the existential weirdness of having a body that can learn a wrong pattern and then refuse to unlearn it. You spend your whole life assuming your body knows what it's doing, and then you discover that some tiny cluster of neurons in your brainstem has decided on a coordination pattern that makes you look pregnant after every meal, and you get no vote.
That's the part that doesn't get enough attention in the clinical literature. The psychological toll of a condition where your body is visibly doing something you can't control and most doctors can't explain it, and the treatments are partial and require grinding daily effort. It's isolating.
Daniel's been dealing with this for years. That's a long time to live with a body that won't cooperate.
And it's why getting the diagnosis right matters so much. If you've been told it's IBS, or it's in your head, or you just need to eat differently, and then you discover there's a name for this, there's a mechanism, there's EMG evidence showing exactly what's happening, that's validating. Even if the treatments aren't perfect, knowing the name of the thing you're fighting changes something.
It's a mouthful. But it's a real thing, with real physiology behind it.
The research is moving, even if slowly. There's work on transcutaneous vagus nerve stimulation, TVNS, in early pilot stages. The idea is to stimulate the vagus nerve non-invasively through the skin of the ear to try to normalize the afferent signaling from the gut to the brainstem. Some patients report reduced bloating severity. The mechanism isn't fully clear yet, and it's years from being a standard treatment, but it's a direction.
Which is hopeful, in a cautious way. But it also underscores the gap between where the science is and where patients are. Daniel's living with this now. He can't wait for TVNS to mature.
And that's the tension. Biofeedback is the best tool we have, and it's imperfect. The question is how to make it more accessible, more effective, and more durable.
Let's define the thing precisely, because the name tells you the story. Abdomino, abdominal wall. Phrenic, the diaphragm, innervated by the phrenic nerve. Dyssynergia, coordination failure. The abdominal wall and the diaphragm are supposed to be dance partners, and instead they're wrestling.
The wrestling match produces a visible winner. The abdomen distends outward because the diaphragm is contracting downward, while the abdominal wall is pulling inward. Everything in between gets squeezed out like a tube of toothpaste.
Normally, when you eat a meal, your stomach needs room to expand. The diaphragm relaxes upward, the abdominal wall relaxes outward, and the whole system accommodates the incoming food. It's called gastric accommodation, and it's one of those reflexes you never think about until it breaks.
In APD, the diaphragm does the opposite. It contracts downward during exhalation, while the abdominal wall contracts inward. The stomach has nowhere to go but forward. That's why the hydrogen breath tests come back normal, why the gastric emptying studies look fine. The gas volume is unremarkable. The coordination is the pathology.
Which makes APD fundamentally different from what most people mean when they say bloating. IBS bloating often does involve excess gas from fermentation or altered motility. With APD, you're not trying to reduce gas production. You're trying to retrain a motor pattern.
That distinction matters clinically. The entire standard bloating workup, elimination diets, probiotics, rifaximin, is aimed at the wrong target. You can have perfectly normal gut flora and perfectly normal gas volumes and still look 6 months pregnant after a sandwich.
How does an automatic subconscious coordination pattern just break?
The short answer is, we don't fully know. But the leading hypothesis is that surgery disrupts the afferent signaling from the viscera to the brainstem. Your gut is constantly sending sensory information upward, stretch, pressure, chemical signals, through the vagus nerve to the nucleus tractus solitarii. The brainstem integrates that information and coordinates the motor response. When you alter the surgical field, you may be altering the sensory data stream. The brainstem receives garbled input and produces a garbled output.
Garbage in, garbage out. But the garbage is your abdominal profile.
The brainstem doesn't know the output is garbled. It's just responding to the signals it's getting. From its perspective, the coordination is appropriate to the input. The problem is the input has been scrambled by inflammation, scarring, nerve stretch, maybe all of the above. The brainstem isn't broken. It's faithfully executing a pattern based on bad data.
That's why conscious effort can't override it. The motor cortex isn't in this loop.
The vagus nerve is the main highway here. It carries something like 80% of the parasympathetic traffic to the gut, but it's also a massive sensory nerve. Stretch receptors in the stomach wall, chemoreceptors detecting nutrients, pain receptors, all of that flows upward through the vagus to the nucleus tractus solitarii. The NTS then projects to the dorsal motor nucleus of the vagus, which sends motor signals back down. It's a loop, afferent in, efferent out. And when you perform a cholecystectomy, you're operating right in the neighborhood of that loop.
The gallbladder is physically adjacent to the vagal branches that handle this conversation.
During surgery, there's retraction, cautery, local inflammation afterward. Any of that can alter the firing properties of vagal afferents. A small amount of scarring around a nerve branch can change the threshold for firing. Signals that used to mean normal stretch might now read as excessive distension. The brainstem gets a distorted picture and adjusts the motor output accordingly.
The brainstem thinks the stomach is overdistended and responds by tightening everything down, when in reality the stomach is just doing its normal thing.
That's the visceral somatic reflex hypothesis in a nutshell. The afferent signal is pathologically amplified, the brainstem interprets it as a threat, and the motor response is this co-contraction pattern that produces exactly the distension the brainstem was trying to prevent. It's a feedback loop that creates its own justification.
That's almost darkly comic. Your body is causing the very thing it's trying to avoid, and the evidence of the problem reinforces the reflex that creates it.
Because central pattern generators in the brainstem and spinal cord handle this coordination, not the motor cortex, the loop runs autonomously. A central pattern generator is a neural circuit that produces rhythmic motor output without conscious input. Breathing is the classic example. You don't think about breathing. The CPG in the medulla handles it. The coordination of diaphragm and abdominal wall during postural changes and eating is similarly automatic.
Which is why just relax your stomach is about as useful as just stop having a heartbeat for a second.
It's worse than useless because it implies the problem is psychological. It tells the patient they're failing at something they should be able to control. But the neural substrate for voluntary control of this reflex simply doesn't exist. You can hold your breath. You can consciously tighten your abs. But you cannot consciously coordinate the reciprocal relaxation of diaphragm and abdominal wall during gastric filling. That circuit doesn't run through the parts of the brain you have access to.
The EMG studies back this up. They can actually see the paradoxical contraction pattern in real time.
You hook up surface electrodes over the diaphragm and the abdominal wall, you give the patient a meal, and you watch. In a normal subject, abdominal wall EMG activity decreases during eating. The muscles relax. The diaphragm relaxes upward. In APD, you see the opposite. The diaphragm EMG spikes during exhalation, and the abdominal wall EMG increases. They're co-contracting. And the patient's abdomen is visibly distending while the gas volumes, measured separately, remain normal.
You've got a patient who's been told for years that it's IBS, or it's anxiety, or they're eating the wrong things. And then they see the EMG trace, and it's right there. Their muscles are literally doing the wrong thing, and it's measurable.
There's a case series I came across. A patient, female, mid-40s, 3 years post-cholecystectomy. Chronic bloating that started within weeks of the surgery. Normal hydrogen breath test. Normal gastric emptying study. Everyone told her it was functional. Then someone did abdominothoracic EMG, and the trace showed her diaphragm contracting downward during every exhalation while her rectus abdominis fired simultaneously. The gas volume in her colon, measured by CT, was completely unremarkable. The distension was purely mechanical.
3 years of being told it was in her head, and the answer was visible on a screen the whole time.
That's the tragedy of how poorly recognized APD is. Most gastroenterologists aren't trained to look for it. The diagnostic tools exist, manometry, EMG, but they're not part of the standard post-surgical bloating workup. Patients bounce between GI docs, dietitians, sometimes even psychiatrists, while a measurable neuromuscular coordination problem goes undiagnosed.
The etiology picture is, surgery disrupts vagal afferent signaling through inflammation, scarring, or nerve stretch. The brainstem receives distorted sensory input. The central pattern generators learn a maladaptive motor response, co-contraction, instead of reciprocal relaxation. And once learned, that pattern is self-reinforcing, because the distension it creates feeds back into the distorted afferent loop.
The conscious brain is locked out of the whole process. You can watch it happen to your own body and have no more control over it than you have over your patellar reflex when the doctor taps your knee.
Which sets up the treatment problem in a very specific way. You're not trying to teach the conscious brain a new skill. You're trying to retrain a brainstem reflex that doesn't speak the language of conscious intention.
That's exactly where biofeedback gets interesting, and where it runs into its limits. The parallel that helps me think about this is pelvic floor dyssynergia. Same category of problem, muscles that should relax during a specific function instead contract. And the treatment that actually works is EMG biofeedback. You put sensors on, you show the patient their own muscle activity on a screen, and you teach them to recognize what relaxation actually feels like, then practice it until it sticks.
It's not that the patient doesn't know how to relax. It's that the feedback loop between intention and sensation has been scrambled, and the biofeedback rebuilds it.
For APD, the setup is similar. Surface EMG electrodes over the diaphragm and the upper abdominal wall. The patient watches the trace in real time while eating or doing diaphragmatic breathing exercises. They learn to associate the visual signal, the EMG trace dropping, with the internal sensation of actually relaxing the right muscles. Over time, the brainstem starts to incorporate that feedback into its motor program.
How long are we talking?
The protocols I've seen run 8 to 12 weeks, multiple sessions per week, plus daily home practice. And even then, the results are partial. 60 to 70% of patients report meaningful improvement, but meaningful often means a 50% reduction in bloating severity, not a full resolution. It's management, not cure.
Which is still life-changing if you've been dealing with this for years. But it's not the kind of outcome that makes for a clean before and after photo.
There's the durability problem. I read about a patient who used a home EMG biofeedback device for 12 weeks, got about a 50% reduction in post-meal distension, felt like she had her life back, stopped the daily practice because life gets busy. Within 6 weeks, the symptoms were back to baseline. The brainstem pattern reasserted itself the moment the reinforcement stopped.
It's like physical therapy for a sprained ankle. You don't just do the exercises until it feels better and then stop forever. The proprioceptive retraining has to become permanent, or the old batting creeps back.
For something like APD, where the trigger, the altered bile signaling, the scarring, is still present, the brainstem has a constant invitation to revert. Every meal is a rehearsal of the old pattern unless you're actively practicing the new one.
Which makes the treatment burden genuinely high. It's not a course of antibiotics where you take the pills and you're done. It's a daily discipline. Probably for life, with imperfect results.
That's where the conversation about neuromodulators gets frustrating, because the instinct from both doctors and patients is to look for a pharmacological shortcut. If it's a nerve problem, surely there's a pill. But SSRIs, tricyclics, gabapentinoids, they bathe the entire central nervous system in a chemical fog. They might dampen the visceral hypersensitivity, reduce the distress, take the edge off the pain component. But they cannot retrain a specific motor reflex at the brainstem level.
You're altering serotonin reuptake across every synapse in your brain to try to fix a coordination pattern in a tiny cluster of neurons in your medulla. The precision isn't there.
The side effects are not trivial. Sedation is the one Daniel flagged, and he's right. If you're already dealing with a condition that makes you feel bloated and uncomfortable, adding cognitive fog and fatigue on top of that is a rough trade. Weight gain from tricyclics is another one, which is particularly cruel when the condition already makes you look distended.
The pills might make you care less about the bloating, but they won't make the bloating go away, and they might add problems that make the whole package worse.
That's the honest summary. They have a role for patients with significant visceral hypersensitivity or comorbid anxiety, but they're not treating the APD itself. They're treating the emotional volume knob on the experience.
Which brings us to the more speculative stuff. You mentioned transcutaneous vagus nerve stimulation.
The idea is elegantly simple. Instead of trying to retrain the brainstem through biofeedback from the muscle side, you try to normalize the afferent signaling from the nerve side. You stimulate the auricular branch of the vagus nerve through the skin of the ear, non-invasive, just clip an electrode on, and the hope is that this restores more normal sensory traffic from the gut to the nucleus tractus solitarii.
You're not teaching the brainstem a new pattern. You're trying to fix the garbled input so the old, correct pattern can reemerge on its own.
That's the theory. There's some early pilot data suggesting it can reduce bloating severity in a subset of patients, but the mechanism isn't fully clear. We don't know if TVNS is actually normalizing vagal afferent signaling, or if it's doing something else, modulating inflammation, altering central pain processing. The studies are small, the protocols aren't standardized, and we're years away from knowing whether this is a real treatment or just an interesting signal in the noise.
It's hope, but it's the kind of hope you put in a drawer and check on in 5 years.
And for someone like Daniel, who's living with this now, TVNS isn't an answer today. It's a direction. The answer today, the best tool we actually have, is biofeedback, with all its imperfections. Find a center that specializes in GI biofeedback, usually at an academic medical center. Get the EMG diagnosis first so you know what you're treating. Then commit to the practice, not for 12 weeks, for as long as it takes.
Which is a hard thing to hear, but it's also clarifying. You stop chasing the miracle fix and start building the discipline.
That's where I think the clinical conversation needs to go. Stop telling patients it's IBS or anxiety or something they ate. Name the condition. Show them the EMG. Explain that the treatment is retraining a reflex, not curing a disease. Set realistic expectations. 50% improvement is a win. And then give them the tools and the support to do the work.
If someone's listening to this and thinking, that's me, the post-surgical bloating, the normal tests, the years of being told it's functional, what do they actually do on Monday morning?
First step is get the right diagnosis. If you've had abdominal surgery, especially gallbladder removal, and you've got chronic bloating that doesn't respond to dietary changes, ask for a referral to a gastroenterologist who can perform abdominothoracic manometry or surface EMG. Not every GI practice has the equipment, so you may need to look at academic medical centers. But don't let them stop at the hydrogen breath test and tell you it's IBS. That test is looking for gas. APD isn't a gas problem. You need someone who can watch the muscles.
Once you've got the diagnosis, what's the actual treatment path?
Biofeedback is where the evidence points. But you need a skilled therapist. This isn't something you figure out from a YouTube video. GI biofeedback is a specialty. Look for centers that do pelvic floor biofeedback and ask if they also handle abdominal dyssynergia. Often, the same departments handle both because the principle is identical. The therapist places the EMG sensors, shows you your own muscle activity in real time, and coaches you through the sensation of actually relaxing the diaphragm and the abdominal wall in coordination.
Then you go home and practice.
The sessions with the therapist are the calibration. The home practice is where the retraining actually happens, and the study suggests it takes months, not weeks, to get durable results. Even then, 50% improvement is a realistic goal, not zero symptoms.
Which is a hard thing to hear, but it's also useful. If you expect a cure, you'll quit when it doesn't come. If you expect partial relief that requires maintenance, you might stick with it.
On the medication side, if a doctor offers you an SSRI or gabapentin for this, the question to ask is this for visceral hypersensitivity, or is this supposed to fix the coordination? If they say the latter, they don't understand the condition. If they say the former, that's a reasonable conversation. Some patients do get benefit from dampening the hypersensitivity, but go in knowing the pill won't retrain the reflex.
The side effect profile matters. If you're already dealing with post-meal distension that affects your quality of life, adding sedation or weight gain on top of that is a real trade-off.
The other thing I'd recommend, low-tech, low-risk, zero-cost, is a symptom diary. Track meal size, meal timing, posture during and after eating, stress levels, and the severity of the bloating. It won't fix the coordination, but it can help you identify patterns that make it worse. Some patients find that smaller, more frequent meals reduce the distension because there's less gastric filling at any one time. Others notice that slouching after a meal makes it worse because it changes the mechanics of the diaphragm.
There's the diaphragmatic breathing piece.
The evidence for diaphragmatic breathing in APD specifically is anecdotal, not from controlled trials. But the physiology makes sense. Slow, deliberate diaphragmatic breathing. Expanding the belly on the inhale, letting it fall on the exhale, is essentially practicing the opposite of the APD pattern. It's not going to retrain the brainstem reflex by itself, but it may help with the associated discomfort. 5 minutes before a meal, 5 minutes after. Worst case, it does nothing. Best case, it takes the edge off.
The Monday morning checklist is get the EMG diagnosis, find a GI biofeedback program, set realistic expectations about what improvement looks like, have an honest conversation about neuromodulators if hypersensitivity is part of the picture, and start tracking what makes it better or worse.
Give yourself some grace. This is a condition where your own nervous system is working against you. It's not a failure of willpower. It's not something you're doing wrong. It's a measurable neuromuscular coordination breakdown that requires a specific, sustained intervention. The fact that the intervention is imperfect doesn't mean you're failing. It means the science still has catching up to do.
Even with all of that, the diagnosis, the biofeedback, the symptom tracking, there are still questions that just sit there unanswered. One of them is the one Daniel's probably asked himself 100 times. Why does this reflex stick around indefinitely in some people, while others seem to recover normal coordination on their own?
That's the mystery. You'd think the brainstem, given enough time and normal signaling, would eventually unlearn the maladaptive pattern. And for some post-surgical patients, it does. The bloating fades after 6 months or a year. But for others, and Daniel sounds like he's in this group, the reflex locks in and doesn't let go. We don't know why. It could be the extent of nerve involvement during surgery. It could be individual differences in neuroplasticity. It could be that the altered bile acid signaling is more disruptive in some people than others.
Which raises a question that I don't think anyone has a good answer to yet. If we know that a significant percentage of gallbladder patients develop this, could early post-surgical biofeedback prevent it from becoming chronic in the first place?
That's the prevention question, and it's entirely unstudied as far as I can tell. Imagine a protocol where, 2 weeks after surgery, every cholecystectomy patient gets a session of abdominothoracic EMG. If the coordination looks normal, great, see you later. If it's starting to drift into that co-contraction pattern, you start biofeedback immediately, before the brainstem has months or years to reinforce the wrong pattern. You might be able to head off the chronic form entirely.
Instead of waiting until someone's been distended for 3 years and has cycled through 6 gastroenterologists who all said it was IBS.
And that's the kind of shift that takes a decade to move from someone should study this to this is standard practice. But it's where the logic points.
I keep coming back to this. We talk about the gut-brain axis mostly in terms of mood. Serotonin in the gut, the microbiome affecting anxiety, all that. But APD is a reminder that the gut-brain axis is fundamentally about motor coordination. Your brainstem is running a physical machine, and when the sensory feedback breaks, the machine moves wrong. It's not psychological. It's not emotional. It's biomechanics, just at a scale we can't see without electrodes.
That's what makes it so hard for patients to be believed. If you can't see the malfunction with the naked eye, and the tests come back normal, the default assumption is that it's functional, which in medical parlance often means we don't know, so it's probably in your head. APD is a condition that proves how wrong that assumption can be. The malfunction is real, it's measurable, and it's happening in a part of the nervous system you can't reach by trying harder.
Your subconscious systems can break in ways you can't think your way out of. That's the thing I want sitting with people after this episode. Not as something hopeless, because there are tools, imperfect as they are, but as something clarifying. If you've been blaming yourself for a coordination problem your brainstem learned without your consent, maybe the first step is recognizing that the blame was never yours to carry.
The second step is finding someone who can put the electrodes on and show you what's actually happening. Because seeing the trace, seeing your own muscles do the wrong thing in real time, that's when it stops being a mystery and starts being a problem you can work on.
No, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The largest knot ever tied was a Carrick bend made from a single length of manila rope measuring over 4,000 feet, created by sailors of the British Somaliland Coast Guard in 1892 during a demonstration of heavy weather lashing techniques.
4,000 feet of rope tied into one knot. That's either impressive seamanship or a cry for help.
I'm trying to imagine the untangling process.
This has been my Weird Props. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you want more episodes, you can find us at myweirdprompts.com. For Daniel, and for anyone whose body learned a wrong pattern and won't unlearn it, the science is catching up. Slowly, but it's catching up.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show. My weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.